With much gratitude, I welcome all of the assembled Vaishnavas to this evening's program. Srila Jaipatak Swami Maharaj, His Holiness, remains in critical condition. However, the doctors are very pleased that his condition is stable. The blood pressure, the blood sugar, and all of these other important factors are stable. And he is very, very gradually improving. But in this critical condition, although the improvements are a very hopeful and positive sign, still it is a very dangerous situation. And we should continue from our heart of hearts to very intensely pray to Sri Sri Radha, Shyam Sundar, Srila Prabhupada, for their mercy and blessings to shower upon him. And if it is their desire that he will recover and be with us again, and that we can serve him nicely and bring him great happiness. Devotees are now through most of the day reading for him, and he is responding to devotees' voices and messages. Let us all take some moments to pray for Srila Jaipatak Swami Maharaj. I hope all of you had a nice experience during our Govardhan Parikrama yesterday. I am sure you are feeling very much purified, physically, emotionally, and spiritually from the experience. I can hear many sweet coughing sounds, like the chirping of the birds in the Vrindavan forest. Hare Krishna. Tonight I would, with your permission, like to continue a little from where we left off in Vrindavan and then discuss in brief Sri Radha Kund and the holy places near Radha Kund. When Krishna returned, what apparently was the same day that he killed Agasura, back to the village of Braja, it was in fact 1 year later, by the inconceivable Yogamaya potency of the Lord and the bewilderment of Lord Brahma. When he returned, Krishna just completed his fifth year and entered into his sixth year, which begins his Poganda Leela. It was on the eighth day of the bright fortnight of the month of Kartik, that Krishna and Balaram were given the charge of the cows. That day is forever celebrated as Gopastami. In fact, tomorrow is Gopastami. We will be celebrating in Barsana. Initially, we were planning to be in Nandagaon, but because so many thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of Brijabasis and other Parikrama groups are all going to be gathered in Nandagram tomorrow, with almost 4,000 of us extra, we were thinking it might be, we may cause a disturbance. So we will go to Barsana the next day. The first day when Lord Sri Krishna took the 900,000 cows of Nanda Maharaj into the forest of Vrindavan, it was a great, great joy for Krishna and all of his associates. In fact, for the entire earth. Previously, when Krishna was younger, his footprints with the 21 symbols on it were quite faint and small because he was so light. But when he achieved his Paganda age, the weight of his body increased and his footprints made very clear, beautiful impressions upon the surface of the earth. These footprints were declared by the Brijabasis to be the ultimate ornament of the earth planet. They were considered so beautiful, so sacred, that even though there was so many cowherd boys and so many cows, and they would be playing and fighting and roaming through the pasture grounds and the forests of Vrindavan from the morning till the evening, no one would ever step on any of the footprints of Krishna. Because those footprints are not different from him. And they were considered so sacred, so beautiful, the crown of the planet. Desiring to enjoy pastimes, Krishna and Balaram entered into the Vrindavan forest. Sri Vrindavan everything is for the pleasure of Krishna and the devotees. Everything arranged so personally, so nicely for the Lord's enjoyment. All the five senses completely satisfied just by the experience of Sri Vrindavan. The eyes, by seeing the wonderful flowers and the trees, the beautiful bejeweled stones and the mountains, the elegant crystal clear waters of the rivers and the lakes, and the nose by smelling the fragrant flowers and fruits and the nectar coming from the waters, the taste by tasting the sweetness of these fruits, and tasting the ambrosia of the water, the touch was completely satisfied by the feeling of the breeze, by the touch of the creepers and the flowers. In this way, every part of the body and mind was completely satisfied by the loving services of Sri Vrindavan Dham. Krishna saw all of this. And the trees, all the trees, were bowing down in love and devotion to Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he explained that a person who has the fruits of good qualities is like a tree with bountiful fruits. Such a tree, because of the heaviness of those fruits, is always bowing down to everyone that passes. But a tree that doesn't have proper fruits stands up very erect with its head up. Similarly, a person who does not have actual divine qualities is very proud, considers him or herself to be superior to others, and is more interested in being served than serving. But a person who has spiritual fruits and good character, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, like a tree, is eager to bow down in humility. Amanina manadena. Eager to offer all respects to others and not expecting respect for oneself. This is how we can understand who actually has the fruits of good character. All the trees were bowing down to Krishna. And Krishna wanted to praise them. But he did not want to praise them by saying, "You are bowing down to me." So he spoke in such a way that they were all bowing down to Lord Balaram. But all the creepers and all the trees and everything in Vrindavan could hear what he was speaking. He said, "Oh Lord Balaram, just see how all the trees with their fruits and flowers are being offered to you. And the bees of Vrindavan, they are actually very great purified sages. And they're buzzing, singing your glories. And wherever they go, they follow you. And even when you go to the most confidential places to perform your most intimate pastimes, where you won't allow anyone else to go, the bees are allowed to follow, to sing for you, and to taste the sweetness of the nectar of your divine pastimes. And the peacocks are dancing for you. And the deer, they are lovingly glancing upon you. And the cuckoo birds, they are singing your glories according to the essence of all the Vedic hymns. The earth is supremely fortunate to be ornamented with your footprints. And the rivers and the mountains are supremely fortunate to be in the pathway of your glance. And the creepers, how fortunate are they when you reach over and touch them with your fingers. And the gopis, they are always eager to be embraced and held to your chest. Something even Lakshmi longs for." Krishna and Balaram and the gopas, they would play in the forest of Vrindavan and respond to the sound, to the buzzing of the bees, to the sweet song of the cuckoos, to the chatter of the parrots, and to the coo of the swan. Would you like to do? The coo of the swan. I think you are paramhamsas. The chatter of the parrots. the sweet song of the cuckoos. Well done, well done. And the buzz of the bees. Well done, well done. Excellent. In this way, the gopas would spend the whole day playing. But because they were making these wonderful sounds for the pleasure of Krishna and Balaram, they were in the highest joy, spiritual ecstasy. And because they were making these beautiful sounds for the pleasure of Krishna and Balaram, out of love for their enjoyment, Krishna and Balaram were enjoying unlimitedly. Krishna would call the names of each of his cows in a very thunderous voice. And the gopas would be enchanted by seeing how each cow would reciprocate with such love, with such intimacy with Krishna as he called her holy names. Krishna would imitate the lion. Sounds like jackals. Lion, please. You could be lions, you can be lionesses. Very loudly, please. Well done, well done. But unlike all of us, when Krishna would roar like a lion, it was so real, it was so fearful, that all the smaller animals in the forest would run in fear into the forest, and Krishna Balaram and all the gopas would run with the smaller animals in fear of the lion's roar. Lord Balaram, while playing throughout the day, would become tired and lay on a gopa's lap. And Krishna, his younger brother, would massage him and render so many services. And Krishna Balaram would laugh and play. They would glorify the gopas, dancing, singing, jumping, and fighting. When Krishna would be tired, he would lay down with his head on the pillow of a tree, the roots of a tree, or the lap of a cowherd boy, and the devotees would sing for him and massage him and make little fans and fan him. In this way, by the power of Yoga Maya, Krishna's internal potency, Krishna and Balaram appeared just like ordinary cowherd boys playing in the forest with their friends. But sometimes Krishna would display his powers as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Once the boys approached him, Subal, Sridhama, Stoka Krishna, Ujvala, Gandharva, Arjuna, Marumangal, and they all spoke very lovingly to Krishna and Balaram. Said, "O Balaram, O one with mighty arms, O Krishna, who is the destroyer of miscreants, close by is a forest called Talavan. The boys would love to play near Govardhan Hill. Talavan is only about 8 kilometers from Govardhan Hill, according to the Acharyas. Close by is this forest, and in this forest, there are most delicious fruits. These fruits are so ripe. They are a dark blue in color, and they're very soft, so sumptuous that they radiate with sweet fragrance. Even from here, we are smelling the fragrance of these fruits, and it is intoxicating us. We are very much eager to taste these fruits, but we cannot. Because guarding the forest of Talavan is a very powerful demon who has taken the form of a gigantic ass. His name is Denukasura. Surrounding him is a whole assembly of other powerful demons in the forms of asses. This Denukasura is known to eat men alive. This is horrible. Can you imagine seeing someone you love being eaten alive by a massive ass? Just chewing on their flesh and drinking their blood and crushing their bones with his teeth and spitting out the corpse. Hare Krishna. Very cruel. So horrible. So terrible. No one will go anywhere near this forest. All of the animals have run away. Not even a single bird will go to the Talavan forest. But Krishna and Balaram, please don't think that if you kill these demons, that we will lose our intimacy of friend of relationship as intimate friends. Don't think that if you kill these demons and we watch you, that we'll be afraid to wrestle you in the future. It will only increase our sakyaras. It will only increase our happiness. But how we are longing to eat these fruits. Our acharyas explained to us, actually, for a devotee, patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachtati. Krishna says, offer me a fruit, flower, leaf, or water with devotion, I will accept it. The gopas did not want these fruits for themselves. The gopas and the gopis of Vrindavan want nothing for themselves. Everything is for Krishna and Balaram, or Radha and Krishna. Srila Prabhupada would often tell us, we should offer the best we have to Krishna, not the least we have. Krishna reciprocates with how we surrender to him. Prabhupada uses example, somebody who is very, very wealthy, who builds an entire empire and wonderful palaces for him or herself, and then offers a little something to Krishna. Krishna doesn't just see what you give him. Krishna sees what you keep back. But even that little lady in Radha Damodar temple, the old widow who was just bringing some Yamuna water to Radha Damodar every day, Prabhupada, with tears of affection, even years later, would speak about her. Because she offered everything she had, the best thing she had. A devotee wants to offer the best to Krishna. Not that we put elegant diamonds on ourselves and we put some plastic on Krishna. Of course, sometimes to keep away thieves, you don't put diamonds to endanger Krishna. But the spirit we should understand. So the gopas, they wanted to offer the best to Krishna and Balaram. And these tal fruits in the Taliban forest were the best fruits. So Krishna, let us go to Taliban. Balaramji, let's kill these demons and eat the fruits and have a good festival. Krishna and Balaram, upon hearing the cowherd boys, they exclaimed, "How can a mere donkey be so strong?" And then they started to laugh. And with the gopas, they danced their way into the Taliban forest. Balaramji was the first to enter. With his strong arms, he shook one of the trees. He shook it so hard, like a massive elephant shaking a tree. And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fruits started falling on the ground. Then he went to another tree and shook it, and all the fruits were tumbling down to the ground. Big, ripe, juicy fruits. And as they were tumbling to the ground from a near distance away, Denukasura heard. He could not believe it. No one dared to enter this forest. Who has the insanity, the foolishness to endanger their lives to shake the trees from his, the fruits from his trees? Denukasura was furious, absolutely furious. This is what happens when we become attached to being the enjoyer and the proprietor of anything within this world. That attachment creates lust. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. When you contemplate the objects of the senses, attachment. From attachment, lust. When lust is unfulfilled, what happens? Anger. So Krishna gives, from anger, there is bewilderment of memory. When the memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. When intelligence is lost, we fall down again into the material pool. So Krishna says, from the very beginning, one must fight and curb this deadly symbol of sin called kama or lust. It's a whole system. And no one is exempt. Material nature is very powerful. It begins with contemplation. That contemplation will naturally develop attachment and then lust. Attacks our heart. Krishna consciousness is to keep our mind filled with Krishna. By hearing about Krishna, by chanting the names of Krishna, by engaging the mind and senses in Krishna's service. And there are so many ways to serve. Denukasura, he could not tolerate what he claimed to be his, somebody else came to usurp. Now, actually, there were so many fruits in that forest. It was a huge forest. There was enough for everyone. But the power of Maya is when we develop that greed, we lose our intelligence. So he was raging with anger and roared. He came roaring. It was a hideous, thunderous roar. He charged into the Taliban forest, and there he saw Balaram standing there, shaking his trees. Denukasura ran right up to him, turned his backside toward Balaram. That's not proper etiquette to the deity. Turned his rear side right in front of Balaram's face. And then with great strength, he reared his back legs up and hurled them right into Balaramji's chest.
Balaram stood there. Effortless. That was an insult to Denukasura. Denukasura became even more intensely angry. And he ran around in circles. He was insane with anger. Running around in circles, he ran back to Balaramji, turned his rear side to him, and started screaming, hideous, roaring, screaming. Between his hooves hitting the ground and his screaming, all the trees were shaking and the earth was shaking. Like a volcano of rage, he was screaming out. Everyone. You sound like crickets. Denukasura. Like that. And not like that. Screaming at Balaramji. Again, he hurled his legs into Balaram. Boom, boom, boom. Balaramji effortlessly, with one hand, grabbed on to the hind legs of Denukasura. This was a hideous battle. Cannot imagine. But Balaramji lifted him up by his hind legs and whirled him in circles around and around and around. Around and around and around. Denukasura lost his life. Being swung around by Balaram. Can you imagine? Such a powerful, immense demon as that. How fast Balaram must have been whirling around to kill him through that process? Whirling him. When Denukasura was just whirled to death, Balaram flung him high into the air and aimed Denukasura's gigantic body to fly through the sky and land on top of the highest palm tree. The palm tree began to shake. Really shook. And some of the branches started falling, breaking. And it shook more and more and more and more and more under the weight of Denukasura until it broke. And it hit another palm tree. It started shaking and shaking and shaking and shaking. And that palm tree was shaking so much like this, it hit another palm tree. And all, every palm tree, every tree in the Taliban forest was shaking. The ground was shaking. All due to the weight of this Denukasura. And so many of the trees were shaking and falling and breaking and shaking and falling and breaking. And all the trees were falling, all the fruits were falling to the ground. The associates of Denukasura were outraged. From all directions, they attacked Krishna and Balaram. Balaram took one at a time, whirled them around, and Krishna, he was right there to help. He was taking one at a time, each demon. Denukasura was their leader. They were all following in their footsteps. So Krishna and Balaram let them follow in his footsteps up to the point of their death. Krishna Balaram taking those immense asses, whirling them, throwing them to the tops of different trees. And trees were breaking and fruits were falling. And it was a magnificent scene. The whole earth was covered with these luscious, beautiful fruits. And as far as the trees go, these big asses were like a dark blue color, most of them. Some were other colors. And it looked like, they looked like rain clouds in a beautiful sky at sunset. Because the blood on their bodies, because they were killed by Krishna Balaram, even the blood on their bodies were very beautiful and made the clouds look like they were tinged by the red of the sunshine. The demigod showered flowers and played musical instruments, and all the gopas circled around Krishna and Balaram, clapped their hands, cried out, "Well done, well done." And they had a great festival, dancing and singing. They were so proud to see Krishna and Balaram manifest this unlimited pastimes of love. But yet still, even though the gopas under dangerous situations knew that Krishna Balaram could destroy anyone, whether it was Denukasura, they had so many. Still, by Krishna's yoga maya, he would not interfere with their loving friendship. And they were thinking, still, I can defeat Krishna in wrestling. This is the love of Vrindavan. But the cowherd boys, they would not eat those fruits, because the blood of the asses was falling in the forest. So they considered now the fruits are contaminated. But after this, all the animals, all the birds, and the tribal Pulinda people of Vrindavan, they were also residents of Vrindavan, they would eat all these fruits and be very, very happy, very luscious fruits. And Talavan forest became one of the favorite most plagued places for Krishna and Balaram and the gopas to perform their pastimes. As Krishna and Balaram returned to the village of Braja, Krishna's hair was powdered with the dust raised by the hooves of the cows, the dust of Brajabhumi. As we have explained so many times, quoting from the scriptures and the acharyas, how precious is every grain of dust of Vrindavan. In fact, some of you are coughing so much because you have that dust in your throats. Therefore, this coughing is like sweet music, because it is induced by the dust of Sri Brajabhumi. But it takes faith and spiritual vision to enjoy it. But even if you don't enjoy it, Krishna enjoys it. If you cough with gratitude. Well done, well done. Krishna's hair would be covered with the ornamented Chintamani dust of Vrindavan. There would be the peacock feather in his hair. There's a beautiful story here at Govardhan. Krishna was singing and dancing and playing his flute, and the peacocks came. Peacocks came to watch his beautiful dancing. And Krishna himself wanted to see the peacocks dance. And the peacocks would be dancing, and the gopas would be watching as Krishna would be dancing with the peacocks. And Krishna's reciprocating with the love of the peacocks was so happy. He was dancing and dancing and dancing and playing his flute. Then he became so immersed in his dance that with one hand he was holding his flute. It wasn't even to his lips. And suddenly, without even putting the flute to his lips, seeing Krishna's ecstatic, sweet dance for the pleasure of the gopas and the peacocks, the flute started playing himself. Sweet, nectarine music were flowing out from the flute, and Krishna was watching as the flute was playing. Even Krishna was amazed. And all the gopas were in ecstasy. And all the forest animals, the deers and the cows and the birds Everyone was gathered around to see this most amazing miracle. What a pastime. Krishna's dancing and his flute is playing sweet music in his hand, away from his lips. For the pleasure of the peacocks. This lasted for a long, long time. Then, on behalf of all the peacocks of the Vrindavan forest, the king of peacocks came and offered the best of the peacock feathers of all of Brajbhumi. With tears in his eyes, he bowed his head, and with a heart full of love, as all the peacocks with tears in their eyes, their hearts beating with ecstatic love, he said, "We are only peacocks, we have nothing. The only wealth we have is our feathers, but we want to offer the best we have for you, Krishna, because you are our friend, you are our everything." And he placed the peacock feather at Krishna's lotus feet. And Krishna, overcome with emotion, lifted that peacock feather and put it in his hair. When we see the peacock feather on Krishna's hair, it represents the intimate, infinite, ecstatic love in reciprocation that Krishna has with his devotees in the forest of Vrindavan. So Krishna comes home that evening. Actually, in Nandagram, we'll see tomorrow, Gopastami. The first day Krishna is herding the cows, there is a place called Terakadamba. And after all the playful pastimes of cow herding through the day, Krishna would climb this kadamba tree and go to one of the upper branches and call the cow's names. Each one personally. Now, we chant Maha Mantra. 300,000 names is 192 rounds. That's how Haridas Thakur would chant. 16 rounds is about 25,000 names. Yes, Krishna had 900,000 cows, and he would call every one of their names. How long do you think that took? For you to chant 900,000 names would be 192 times 3, how many rounds is that? Something between 500 and 600 rounds. Yes? But Krishna, he has inconceivable potencies. Achintya Shakti. In Vrindavan, he reveals his inconceivable potencies without even appearing to be supernatural. He can do it and still appear like an ordinary boy. He can kill Putana without changing his role as a little tiny baby who hasn't even learned how to crawl or talk yet. So Krishna, he could call one name and every single one of the cows would personally hear Krishna calling her name. And they would reciprocate at the sound of Krishna's name. Krishna's calling my name. Can you imagine? And none of them think that he's calling everyone else's name. 900,000 cows, and each cow is thinking, Krishna's just calling for me. And the cow would reciprocate. All 900,000 cows hearing her name being called would reciprocate by loudly mooing from the core of her heart as a gesture of love to Krishna.
Not like that, but thank you.
And they'd come running with their tails up and their milk bags swaying side to side. And out of motherly affection, milk pouring in torrents out of their udders and falling in the sweet grasses of Vrindavan. In this way, Krishna would enter into the village of Braja. He would have all the cows in front of him. And then he and the gopas would be there in behind. And the gopis, the young gopis, they had been longing in separation from Krishna to see him from the morning. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Shakshastakam, Sunyayatam Jagat Sarvam, Govinda Virahename. That a moment in separation from Krishna is like 12 years or more. Think back of what you were doing 12 years ago. Can you remember? What was your age then? It's a long time. And a moment, according to the Shastra, a moment is about the amount of time when you, without intentionally doing it, when you blink your eye, the eye blink is so fast that we don't even see the difference. Yes, you blink your eye, you don't even see that you're blinking. So many blinks, but you don't see. I see you're blinking, but you don't see you're blinking. Those inattentional blinks are so fast, we don't even know we're doing it. It's just a fraction of a second. Nimesha. For the gopis, that amount of time was like 12 years or more. The whole universe was like a dreary, empty void without Krishna. The gopis criticized Lord Brahma. Now, Brahma happens to be the first acharya of our parampara. So if we criticize Brahma, the sons of Maricha, this great sage, they criticized Brahma and they had to become demons due to the offense. But the gopis, because of their ecstatic love, there was no envy. It was just an expression of the deep intensity of their love for Krishna. They chastised Brahma. Why are you such an imperfect creator that you put these eyelids? So that even when Krishna is standing right before us, that blink of the eyelid interferes with our darshan of Krishna. That is the love of the gopis. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, it is the ultimate supreme expression of spiritual ecstasy. The highest of all perfections is the love of the gopis of Vrindavan. All day long, their hearts were just pounding in separation from Krishna. And when Krishna and the gopas would be returning to Brajbhumi, the village, after herding the cows all day, Krishna would play his flute. That flute resounded in all directions. When it entered into the ears and into the hearts of the Brajabasis, they understood Krishna was returning. That sound of Krishna's flute is so close. He's here. He's come. And all the gopas would be dancing with Krishna and laughing with Krishna and playing with Krishna. And they would all be chanting the glories of Krishna and Balaram's pastimes for that day. It was a celebration. Yashoda Mai would come running with her arms outstretched to greet Krishna. Nanda Maharaj would be standing with tears of ecstatic love just pouring from his eyes, seeing Krishna and Balaram coming in from the pastures. And Krishna would be smiling so beautifully. He would glance so charmingly while he would play his flute for the pleasure of all the devotees. The gopis came forward to meet him. Their eyes were so eager to see Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains how the gopis, according to the culture, were meant to display shyness before a boy like Krishna and not look at him, stare at him, or gaze at him directly. So the gopis, to look down in that occasion, their ears were feeling so much ecstasy hearing his flute. Their nose was feeling so much ecstasy smelling the fragrance of Krishna's body. Their eyes became envious. Not envious, jealous. There's a difference. The eyes became jealous of the ears and the nose. Why are we left out? We have to also drink the nectar of Krishna's beauty. And therefore the gopis, they gazed upon Krishna like thirsty bees. They were drinking the honey of the lotus-like face of Mukunda. Rupa Goswami explains, Krishna's all attractive. He is Madan Mohan. Kandarpa attracts and controls the entire material universe. But at Madanter, when Kandarpa or Madana wanted to attract Krishna by aiming his most powerful, all-attractive, irresistible flower arrow upon him, just by looking at Krishna, Madana was so attracted that he fell down to the ground unconscious. Therefore, Krishna is Madan Mohan. All beautiful things within the whole creation are only perverted reflections of a little infinitesimal particle of Krishna's beauty. We see how we can become infatuated, enticed, and even lose our intelligence due to beautiful things of this world. Can you imagine the pure, full-fledged source of all beauty? That is Krishna. But on Krishna's all-attractive, beautiful body, the sweetest part is his face. And the sweetest part of Krishna's face is his smile. It's those smiling lips that pour nectar into his flute and attract the hearts of all his devotees. Krishna would smile. The gopis, their eyes like bees, would be drinking the infinitely sweet nectar of Mukunda's smile. All of the distress that they endured due to separation from Krishna was immediately
relieved upon seeing the sweetness of Krishna's smiling face. They gazed upon Krishna with a gaze that that offered to Krishna shyness, jubilation, and submission. As they gazed upon Krishna, they took that smiling, all-attractive form through their eyes into the core of their hearts. And they embraced Krishna there. And Krishna, who is within the heart of the gopis, manifested himself and reciprocated with their love. Krishna accepted the gopis' gaze as an offering of love from their hearts. And Krishna's gaze upon them was his reciprocation of the love from his heart. This is Vrindavan. After fully satisfying all the young gopis, Krishna enters the village, and Yashoda and Rohini, they embrace him. They smell his head, they kiss him, they bring him home, and they offer him every type of affection. First, they lovingly bathe the bodies of Krishna and Balaram, massage them, dress them with lovely, lovely clothes that they would personally make with their own hands. They would decorate them with ornaments, garlands, flowers. They would smear them with sweet fragrances. Then they would offer them the most delicious food that they had prepared with their own hands. Every bite of that food, as Krishna and Balaram tasted it, they were tasting the sweetness of the Vatsalya Ras, the motherly love of Rohini and Yashoda. Rohini and Yashoda, they would bring Krishna Balaram to excellent beds that they would arrange every evening and lay them down. And in this way, Krishna and Balaram happily went to sleep in the village of Braja. Shri Krishna Balaram ki jai. Shri Vrindavan Dham ki jai. I would like to speak briefly about Radha Kund. Did any of you visit Radha Kund today? Yesterday in our parikrama we had the darshan of Sri Radha Kund. Many of us, by placing the three drops on our head, we took the sanctified bath of Sri Radha Kund by tasting her waters. We understand that Radha Kund is the holiest place. It is the highest holy place in all of Brahma's creation. In the peacock of form of Govardhan Hill, Shyamakund and Radhakund are the eyes. And it is in Radhakund and Shyamakund that the sweetest, most intimate of all the pastimes of Radha Krishna take place. That is why Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and our great acharyas, they teach us that we should not approach Radha Kund in a light or familiar way. Otherwise, it will not help to develop our bhakti. The most intimate, loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna, we should honor and worship as something very much way above our heads. We should not think that we have the qualification to barge into it or to just playfully talk about it. We should honor it. We should worship it. We should aspire to be the servant of the servant of the servant of those who actually have realized the glories of Sri Radha Kund. When Prabhupada heard of devotees going to Radha Kund and swimming and splashing and playing. Now, Prabhupada would be happy if devotees did that in Yamuna sometimes. But for Radha Kund, he said no. We should not think that we are so advanced that we can play in the waters of Radha Kund. With great reverence, we should visit, bow down, pray for mercy of Sri Radharani and Lord Sri Krishna. And beg, while begging for their mercy, in the most humble state of mind, sprinkle that water on our heads. Radharani's personal bathing place. In the Astakaliya Lila, every day for 6 hours, between around 10:40 in the morning to 3:36 in the afternoon, Radha and Krishna perform their pastimes at Radha Kund. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Radha Kund is eternally existing in Goloka Vrindavan. There's a beautiful story of how Radha Kund appeared in Goloka. But we'd like to explain how Radha Kund appeared in Bauma Vrindavan, in this Gokul that we are sitting today. Krishna and gopis would perform their Rasleela in the springtime here at Govardhan. One evening, just at the time of twilight, Krishna and the gopis began to prepare for their Rasleela. At that time, Kamsa sent one of the most treacherous of all asuras to Vrindavan. He took the form of a massive bull. His name, Aristasura. He galloped into Vrindavan. As his hooves stomped upon the earth, the entire earth trembled. He roared. It was such a horrible, terrifying roar that all the cows and gopis who were pregnant had miscarriages. The babies died in their wombs. It was so horrible. He pawed the ground. He galloped into Vrindavan roaring. His tail was raised. His eyes were glaring bright red. The hump on his back was scattering the clouds. As he was running, his horns were tearing up the forest and tearing up the riverbanks. As he was running, he was so angry, he was passing urine and stool. The Brijabasis were terrified.
They were scattering, running, screaming in all different directions.
Krishna called out to the residents of Vrindavan, "Do not be afraid. I will protect you." Then Krishna looked at Aristasura and yelled toward him, "You sinful fool, why do you scare the cows and the gopas and the gopis? I am here to punish miscreants like you." Then Krishna, just to defy Aristasura, slapped his palms on his arms. And then, casually, Krishna called Subal to stand next to him. Krishna put one of his arms on Subal's shoulder and looked very relaxed as Aristasura charged toward him. Seeing Krishna take such a formal stance, ready to fight this monstrous bull, who was like a Himalayan mountain and bigger, running toward him, angry, that made Aristasura even more angry. He charged at Krishna, his immense pointed horns pointed right to Krishna's body as he charged forward, his eyes blood red. Krishna effortlessly, with his little hands, seized the bull's horns and threw him back 18 steps. This only angered Aristasura all the more. He became mindless in rage as he attacked Krishna again. Those little hands. Yashoda and Rohini, they would massage those hands every day. They were softer than the softest of the lotus petals. But to Aristasura, those hands pulled at his horns. Krishna held him by the horns, and then with his little lotus foot, that lotus foot, the gopis would cry, thinking of Krishna's foot. It was so soft. Even the softest part of their bodies, they considered, might be hurting Krishna's lotus foot. What to speak when Krishna would be hurting the cows? He may step on a petal, a pebble, little tiny stone, or maybe even a thorn. It would break their hearts because his foot was so soft. Krishna repeatedly kicked Aristasura as he held him by the horns and kicked him right down to the ground. Did you ever see how the Brijabasi ladies wash clothes at a well? Or how sadhus wash their clothes on the bank of the Jamuna or the Ganges? They get their clothes wet and then they beat them. Yes? Have you seen? Sometimes they go, then they put it down and they go, and they go. Sally Agarwal, when Prabhupada was in Butler, Pennsylvania. I'll get back to the story in a moment. This is an American household in Pennsylvania, small town. Prabhupada was living there in 1965, the first place he resided in the United States of America. And many years, Sally Agarwal was telling that Prabhupada would go in the bathroom and all of a sudden she would just see water pouring out from under the door into her living room and getting her carpet all wet. She was wondering, what is Swamiji doing in there? And then she would hear, what's happening in there? The sound is completely unknown in the American culture. This happened so many days, and she was afraid because Swamiji is an elderly Swami, and she's a housewife. What? Finally, one day she said, Swamiji, what are you doing in there? He said, I'm washing my clothes. He said, washing your clothes? How do you wash your clothes? And he showed her. He just put it in the bath. He'd take from his lota the water. He'd take his bath out. He'd dunk the water in the bathtub, stand outside and put it over his body, and all the water would start coming out. Then after he'd dry himself, he'd start putting the water on his clothes, and he'd go, because that's the way sadhus wash clothes. That's the way Krishna killed Aristasura. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, he thrashed Aristasura just like someone thrashes wet clothes. He just thrashed him. And then Aristasura started vomiting blood. His whole body was shaking, trembling. His legs were violently moving about. Then Krishna yanked out Aristasura's horn and stabbed him with it. And Aristasura profusely passed stool and urine. Now imagine a bull that size profusely. We're not going to get into any more details on that. He continued kicking his legs. His eyes were rolling, red hot eyes rolling in agony. And ultimately, Krishna sent him to the abode of death. Sri Krishna Bhagavan Ki Jai. The devas showered flowers upon Krishna. Aristasura represents pride from indulging in false religions, which neglect pure bhakti. Bhakti amam abhijanati yavan yashtasmi tatvata. It is only through bhakti that we can understand Krishna as he is. There are so many new religions in the world today, and so many interpretations of religions that do not teach, that neglect to enlighten people in the science of bhakti or devotional service. For devotees, we understand the only eternal reality is the love of the soul for God. And bhakti is the only means by which we can awaken that reality. We should not be attracted or distracted by great learning. Some people can speak powerful philosophy and can speak such powerful philosophy in such a way that could mesmerize hundreds and thousands of people at a time. Or some people can display mystic powers that really mystify people. Reading minds, healing diseases, looking into the foretelling the future perfectly accurately. Performing supernatural feats by contradicting what is apparently the laws of nature. By creating jewelry or by creating houses or creating planets. A devotee should never be distracted by these things. A devotee is only concerned with one who inspires bhakti from the heart, with humility, with devotion, with sincere service attitude, with genuine compassion for the soul. These are spiritual attributes. We should not approach religion or religious things simply for economic development, for material assets or material benedictions. These are distractions. the inclination toward those things are like Aristasura. Because they obscure bhakti from growing in the hearts. So we have to mature enough to not be distracted or impressed by anything except pure devotional service and those who teach pure devotional service. After the glorious deliverance of Aristasura, Krishna said to gopis, "Now the moon is shining. Let us enjoy our Rasleela here in the kunjas of Sri Giriraj Govardhan." Radharani said to Krishna, "O sinful killer of a bull, do not touch me. I do not want to be contaminated by the reaction of the killing of a male cow." Krishna said, "That is not a. He wasn't just a bull. He was a demon. He terrorized all of Brajbhumi. The whole earth was shaking. The clouds were scattering. The cows were screaming in agony. The gopis were having miscarriages and running for their lives. He was a demon in disguise." Srimati Radharani said, "Yes, I understand, I know, but still, he was a male cow. And you're Gopal, you're supposed to be protecting the cows." Krishna understood her feelings. This is how important cow protection is. Srimati Radharani considered even killing Aristasura, killing a cow. What to speak of slaughtering innocent little cows by the millions all over the world, especially in India. Krishna said, "Oh, Sri Radharani, what should I do? How can I purify myself from this deed?" Srimati Radharani replied that you must purify yourself by taking a bath in all the tirthas in the three worlds. There's a lot of tirthas in the three worlds. Every year we go on yatras to different places. We have only been to a few of the many, many, many tirthas in this little world. All the holy places, all the holy rivers, all the holy kuns, in all the three worlds, take your bath. Krishna said, "I will not leave Vrindavan. I will bring all the holy places in the entire universe here to Sri Vrindavan Dham."